able to come in. Now, this is section 350D. The director has the absolute right of reasonable time to inspect and copy all books, records, blah, blah, blah. That's already been talked about earlier. Again, you know, we're probably not protective or can waive any governmental thing about client records, but one third of our participants are scholarship. We scholarship $300,000 a year worth of money to participants, one third of the people we serve in scholarship. We consider the information they give us in terms of justifying their need for a scholarship to be confidential. It's probably not protected anywhere in any government regulations, but I don't believe that this has to be open record, city director.
It might be protected under the Alaska state constitution, just the right to privacy.
Section 685, or 658, excuse me. A voluntary dissolution. Section 5 there, a vacancy on the board of the corporation is not filled within 6 months of the next, or the next annual meeting, whichever occurs first. Frankly, we have not been living up to that, and it would be problematic for us to live up to it. You know, maybe at some point in time it wouldn't be, but part of what we're dealing with, I have a 36-member board at the YMCA. And there was, at one point in time, I think, an idea that let's put some warm bodies on the board. And so when you're putting warm bodies on the board, you could easily live up to something like that. But if you're exercising good stewardship and good board development, you are putting together a process where you analyze the strengths of the board, you analyze the needs of the agency, the strengths of each board member, what they bring to the board, what they don't, where your vacancies are, and then you go out and try and recruit specific people for specific positions. And I just believe that that there are times, and I, you know, and I question why that even. Contents of the biennial report, 852. And I guess, you know, again, rather than taking time to try and address every item they want in the biennial report, there is a lot of new items that they've added that aren't in the biennial report that are going to take time. You know, we're talking about, again, we're talking about corporations, most nonprofits, and my belief is, and my experience is, that there might be an abusive two out there, but, you know, why take a cannon to kill a mouse? And, you know, so when we go in and legislate all this stuff for all nonprofits, because one or two abuses that I haven't heard about yet, you know, I question it. I think that we have a real natural that can be used there, and I would recommend, is all nonprofits have to file 990s. Why do we have to create another report? Why can't we just send in a copy of our 990s?
Well, the rationale behind doing it this way was to add some information, additional information onto a report that you already had to file. So, one, you didn't have to file an additional report, and two, had some reason to file that report in the first place, which is already required under existing Alaska law. You must file your biannual report.
I'm just offering a suggestion. And the suggestion is, rather than, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 new sections you're adding to the already biannual report to fill in, which, frankly, 2 years ago, I couldn't have given you that information without it. Incredible amount of work because we weren't computerized that way. You know, I think it should be proper for some nonprofits. All nonprofits have to fit in somehow or another if you're under the federal thing. You know, you have to fit certain criteria, you have to file 990. As far as I'm concerned, you know, we ought to change it and say, send us a copy of your 990. That's all
I'm suggesting. Yeah, one of the problems we had in the past is that people objected to having to file a separate report. They said that will place an undue burden on us to have to send anything in. Another bit of testimony we heard quite often was that we prepare other reports and send them into other agencies. And the response to that was, yeah, but people don't know where to get them. And they may not be able to get them even if they know where to get them. So again, what we're trying to do is to have one report with a not unreasonable amount of information. And if you can point out something that's unreasonable, that's what we want to hear. File in one place so that every 2 years you provide this information, and if I want to go down and see what the corporation is doing, I know where to find the report.
I guess I am not saying this is unreasonable. What I'm saying is there's a tremendous amount of new stuff here that's going to take people time and energy to put together.
Is there anything in this section?
John, I think you're missing my point.
Okay, I'm trying
my
to get
point
there.
Is most nonprofits already filed 990s. We'll just send you a copy of it. It's no extra work.
Okay. Is there anything in here that you shouldn't have anyway?
What I'm telling you, unless I'm highly computerized, I'm not going to be able to draw this stuff up easily for you.
How about recurrent and non-recurrent costs, breaking that down? Recurrent administrative costs as opposed to non-recurrent costs.
Cost of filing state reports.
John, the tension that's going on here is pretty clear. There are all of these pieces of information are reasonable, and anyone who wants to dig into an entity is going to want to find them. But what these people are saying is, I can do it, but it is going to be onerous to do it. And what they're also telling me is that some of them operate on such a marginality that onerousness is just going over the line.
I understand that, Eric. What I'm trying to get at is there another format?
Go back to the old binding report.
And attach the 990.
And the old binding, and now the old binding report says attach your 990.
I understand that.
And that's why I think we'd like to talk to the accountants to see, where we are with respect to various information. Does the 990 fulfill the quote public interest? And I think it should. I mean, I think that if that were filed with the state, it seems like that might be a good kind of balancing here.
We're trying to find out what will provide a minimum amount of information with a minimum dislocation for the nonprofit.
Right.
And if that means a 990, then we'll consider a 990.
Yeah, and that's great. I applaud that. I, again, would like to hear some of the abuses that this is trying to correct, because this is coming from the point of a view that we have to protect something. I don't believe you do. If people don't believe in what I'm doing, they won't join or they won't give money. It's that simple.
Well, people believe. I mean, what's going on here is, this is management out here. This is the dissenter right here. And management is telling us, there's no problem, and people won't join if there is a problem. Well, with at a national level with United Way, that we may have discovered that wasn't true. Okay, so there is a tension, there's a balancing that's got to happen.
Yeah.
How much is management going to be forced to disclose what it does? And generally, in terms of a for-profit status, I don't have any problem with forcing management to disclose certain things. The other tension, though, that has become clear in the dialogue today is that you guys operate in such a thin string that it becomes onerous to do it, and maybe it's not appropriate. And that's something that the commission is just going to have to hash out at its next meeting.
And just to add to what Eric says, I like to feel that when I buy Girl Scout cookies, that it's not going to be part of $650,000 that goes to an individual bookkeeper who's embezzled that amount of money. Now, that's your abuse if you want to talk about abuses.
I haven't seen anything in here that would have prevented that.
Well, certainly,
the notion that 99% of the money was going to return administrative costs was given.
That's right. I mean, that's a real big
hit. It wasn't even going in. It was sliding out. Anyway, I mean, several large accounting firms didn't find that, folks. I mean, to use that and say, this is going to find it, I can't find it.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, with respect to an organization that I'm very familiar with, and perhaps all of you in the room are, but on a national level, 2 years ago, Covenant House had a situation in which certain things happened that shouldn't have happened, and one of the reasons that it happened was under the particular articles of bylaws, certain people were given too much power. And I can tell you that these particular provisions would have effectively cured that situation. And so, I mean, and we're talking about a $160 million a year organization. And so I'm not saying that those here, us little people in Alaska, are going to cure the ills of an organization like that. But that's the type of thing that if we can cure something by utilizing the makeup that we have within the state and in that organization, I can tell you, one person had all the control, and all the board of directors were found negligent as far as in the audit. And, you know, it's scary. I mean, it's a scary situation. So I find, because I was personally, I mean, knowledgeable about that situation, I find that this particular law does solve that situation. The Girl Scout situation, if you're going to have somebody embezzling funds, siphoning off, I mean, you're just going to have that. I mean, that's going to be a situation that unfortunately is going to occur. But so it's not that we're, you know, it's not that we don't realize that the administrators of organization and also the board of directors have all the good intentions in the world. It's that we want to make sure that the balance is such that the public is not left out in the cold completely, but we want to make the balance so that it's not so onerous. And particularly, I would say every nonprofit organization in the state of Alaska has monetary problems. I wouldn't just say it's a little, everybody has them. I mean, every board I serve on has them. I mean, we're all trying to get money from the same people, the same corporations. We all have problems, and anything that, in addition, that we have to do is going to cause a monetary impact to the association. So I'm really pleased that everybody came out today to tell us what they see within the bill, and I can tell you this commission is going to have a lot of discussion with respect to each of these areas. And so I'm very pleased to see you all, and I'm also very much concerned that we don't want a Covenant House situation that happened nationally to happen in Alaska. And that's one of the reasons for this type of bill.
You know, I agree with you. When I came up here from Washington, everyone told me Alaska's different. And I said, shock. Yeah. They're right, Alaska's different. I don't think we're going to have a Covenant House whether or not we have this bill. You know, everyone knows everything. They know what's going on. It's incredible in this community.
But we did have a Girl Scout situation, which is amazing that we had that.
This bill, see, that wasn't, that, all that was embezzlement.
Well, you know, I sat on that board for a period of the time when it happened. And the board was filled with talented people. It was filled with dedicated people. At all times, there was at least one CPA. Often, there were two CPA board members. Every year, there was an audit by a Big Eight firm. And but you know where our failure was? Our failure was that just like every one of these social services organizations, we say we want to spend our money on programs. We want to spend our money on the community, on services. We don't want to spend too much on staff. And we didn't. We paid little, and we used people who had just the basic capabilities to do the jobs that some other big-time organization was paying big money for a trained person. And we trusted somebody. And she had green blood, I didn't. And hers turned out to be greener than mine in the end. But this bill, in some ways, will make you pay more attention to the business side of your organization, as well as the social services side.
You know, Carolyn, that's a really good point. But also, we get dinged if we spend too much money on administration.
Yes,
and
that's
overhead.
Right.
Everybody,
what?
That's all
that
right. Money is going into administration.
I agree.
Overhead?
I agree.
So, you're,
so what
I
are
you
going to do?
I agree. That's well, we paid, you know, penny wise and pound foolish.
Again, I applaud the effort. I wouldn't want to be sitting on that side of the table. You know, I would hope to see some more simpler than, you know, I almost think it was overkill, but I do applaud the effort. And, you know, if we didn't have change, things wouldn't get better.
Thank you for wading through all of this bill.
Thank you, yes.
I think.
Did anyone else wish to testify? How are you doing on time, Mary?
I'm okay. I'll get through the test report.
Okay. My name is Harold Lee, and I'm a stadium clerk for the Yukon Presbytery. In having a quick glance at this document, I would encourage the commission to develop two separate documents. I would like to see a complete separation of the provisions of Section 21 and Section 41, and so that Section 41 is not onerous on 21 and there's not a cross-reference one to the other. I believe you are opening the door for problems legally and certainly problems administratively for the churches when you try to have a cross-reference of these two documents. I would encourage you to separate the two in its entirety.
Mr. Lee, under which provisions are you incorporated, is the church incorporated? Could you give me a little history?
I would hope that in the very near future we will be under 41.
And is that, that's a non-linear answer.
I do not know at the present, but this is that we're one of the groups that is under the 10 or the
20.
20 as current, but as some of the churches in Presbytery are. But I will encourage the entire Yukon Presbytery to be under Statute 1041, regardless of whether you separate it or not.
Now, though, under our present system, under the present statute, not this new one, but under the present corporate soul, can your church be under, is your church a corporate soul?
No.
Operation?
No.
Oh, I see, you're not. So you're under the secular right now, but then under this new law, you would be, of course, under the religion.
That's the way I read
okay.
Being a layperson. Now, one of my questions to you, as a layperson, is to explain to me what you mean by corporate soul.
Essentially a bishop.
The bishop.
Bishop
owns the property and runs the
Okay. We operate under a somewhat different system.
That's
where
right.
We have a presbytery executive, a clerk, and we have a board of trustees. They are the basis of the, what you say, the soul.
So you would be a type 2 corporation under 41, which is essentially intended to accommodate exactly that type
right.
of organization.
Just to help
Let's
me out.
Refer Mr. Lee to the particular.
He's well aware.
Dan, the particular provision. Do you know what the type 2 is under 41?
Yes. Well, I have not really had a chance to identify this, but I suspect.
But you're under a board of directors.
Yeah. We're under a presbytery operates. First of all, the property management and the distribution of certain mission funds are under the discretion of the Board of Trustees, particularly for property.
You look at page 144.
But the
three are set out.
Operational activities operate under the Presbytery Executive and the various council members who are assigned certain aspects of evangelism or mission. Aspect. So there are two different ways that the funds are transmitted.
Just to help me out, Mr. Lee, the two statutes are separate statutes. The fact that they're in one bill doesn't mean that they're connected necessarily, legal or otherwise. The cross-references are for purposes of providing, or not having to repeat language that appears in one section and another chapter. So, they're not really, that doesn't really connect the two statutes. That you still look only for 41 if you're talking about a religious nonprofit corporation. So what is it you think is going to cause a problem for you?
I see the intent as being what you say, but down the road, I see the interpretation being that we missed something in 1041, and so we pick up and go back to 1021, and we interpret it from there. And I want some language that definitely says that's not the case.
That would be superfluous language, Mr. Lee, because this bill is drafted in consideration of how courts are going to construe the language. And there's no court, to my knowledge, has ever said because you pick up a phrase from one statute and use it in the other statute that connects the two.
Then would you clarify for me under the paragraph following 10.41380, your reference to 10.20385. Why is it there?
The next one down is 10.20.385.
That's right.
It's a typographical error.
So, my question is, and this preempted, are they really separate? And I feel that your homework needs to be completed.
Well, we need to catch our typographical errors.
Yeah, we are. And some other things.
Down the road, and likewise, if you look at the back of the document, you go back to page 180, you will see a continual reference. As Commissioner Abbott says, and I have a feeling that for clarification, these things, maybe it's proper, but I think they should be set aside as separate entities.
Well, I agree, sir, but one provision that I think attempted to address the concern that you have is found. Now, I hope we're dealing with the same copy, but if you look at page 175 of the bill, which is what is under my copy, continuation of Section 940, Rules of Construction. Do we have the same text?
I have definitions on that.
Look at 1041-940 in your...
I apologize if we have...
He has the same page. It's the same page.
1041-940.
No. Excuse me.
Line 24 on page 175. Does it begin G, since there are fundamental differences?
Yes, that's exactly the one that I wanted to point out. Since there are fundamental differences between for-profit corporations, non-profit corporations, and corporations organized under this chapter, meaning religious corporations, it is not necessary to construe language in this chapter to have the same meaning as similar or identical language found in 06 is the profit-seeking corporation, and of course 21 is the number. So we were attempting to make very clear to a court that when it is construing matters regard to religious corporations, that it is in a totally separate world. And even if it were to find identical statutory language in another part of this section, that construction was not necessarily to be carried forward and applied to religious bodies.
Thank you.
And just for the record, the type of religious corporation under 1041 that would be congenial to the Presbyterian Church would be the trustee type of corporation, which is two.
Did I misspeak?
No.
Okay.
Well, we're using the shorthand phrase of type two. I was the one guilty of it.
Oh.
The statute refers to it as a trustee type of corporation.
Right.
And one does not have to use the word trustee. That's trustee type, call the individuals by whatever terms or titles are traditional within the religion.
Are there any questions?
Thank you very much.
But just going along with Dan's comment, that if you would make a note, page 144 has the type of corporation, your organization falls right in within, and it's small Roman 2. And it is the trustee type of corporation, so that, and when you're looking at this too, because they are all together, you could just almost throw away the everything in from pages 1 through 136, because the religious corporation starts on 137, and maybe it would have been better to put it in two separate bills. We didn't, because of various reasons that the chairman has indicated, but I represent religious corporations, and I'm having them look at 41, and I'm not concerned, as a lawyer, I'm not concerned with them going back to 20. We don't want them back in 21. We want them in 41. Make their life simpler.
That's the way I agree.
Good. And we're all going to, and I'll be, if there's a problem, I'll be testifying before the Supreme Court. So, So that's, I think, I don't think there's a real concern with respect to that, and I appreciate your pointing out the typo. We're going to be looking for those.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Does anybody else wish to offer testimony? Come forward, please.
I'm Francis Parker. I'm wearing two hats. I got an invitation here for the First Presbyterian Church of Anchorage by my name. I'm also the treasurer of the Cook Inlet Historical Society, and we did not get a nuisance. Maybe it was not. I was curious as to how these things were addressed. I don't think they should be sent by name. I'll bet you that this notice that we should have gotten on the museum that we know about is in Diane Brenner's desk, because it's addressed to her. It should be back in September.
Okay, the way this was done was that I called up the director of the Division of Corporations and asked if there was such a thing as a database which had the names, registered agents, addresses of all nonprofit and religious corporations in the state of Alaska. He said, yes, we do. He provided us with a mailing list, and we sent that information out. Now, I would be the last one in the world to say that his database information is correct. All I can say is it's the best information we have, and we sent it out to everybody that we knew about.
I think it should be addressed by job title. I know the state has a fixation on what somebody's name on. But the name, I got involved in this in environmental business a month or so ago.
You see, people don't always tell the Division of Corporations when they change a name or an address, unfortunately. So
name
all we can do.
Maybe go on.
Pardon?
Maybe
deceased. Maybe go on. It would not be in the next session, it would be the second session. And then there would be an effective date a year after that.
1994 or 1995?
Yeah.
It's conceivable that it could get passed in the first half of the next legislature, but it's highly unlikely.
I have recollections of the oil spill that you wish that one. One reason why it's likely to go over is because there will certainly be a lot of new members in the next body that have no acquaintance with this. And our job will be to give them some acquaintance with it. And then, assuming that it meets some general approval, we can move it in the second session. Maybe you're going on the right track in this. I hope you don't increase our workload too much. It looks like this is necessary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker.
Anybody else that wishes to testify?
Yes. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, some of my so-called friends I bought back my acquaintanceship with.
Wait a minute.
I've only got four pages here because I've only gotten to page, I think, 167 or something like that.
Excuse me, could we get a name?
Steele Sanosky.
Okay, thank you.
Multiple Just for the Sclerosis room. Society, Alaska chapter. Yep.
Thank you.
I'd like to, as Ed did, I'd like to start off with a little of intent. And reading this bill put me on the defensive. And I've been with nonprofits, you know, in this city since 1974. I counted up the other day, and I've been with 34 nonprofits. And this made me feel like somebody who's always worked with nonprofits, now working for one, that we've done something wrong. That we're on trial. And so I just wanted, you know, is that what you meant to tell us? It's really kind of, it's Georgia. Like we've all done something wrong. Like somebody's making off with a cookie jar. I know there was United Way. We are all nonprofits now are suffering what you call the United Way syndrome. But that doesn't mean that there isn't things that have happened to the private sector that have been equally as bad. I was a member of a brokerage firm that had my IRAs that disappeared. It is no more. My IRAs are gone too. And there's been a lot of hanky-panky in the stock market, just as much as there's been a United Way in the nonprofit. So don't roll out big guns on us that we don't really deserve to have rolled out. Sort of like you're swatting us with cannons. And the mosquitoes. And as a layperson with a business background and a master's in business administration, I can't figure out what I am representing. MS Society recognizes everybody who has MS as being a member. Our general purpose is to provide support and services to the members. That's anybody who has MS. Anybody who has MS is a voting member. We also have an obligation, implicit and explicit, in our bylaws and in our mission statement to inform the general public what is MS. We solicit donations from the general public. Am I a mutual benefit or a public benefit?
What percentage of your income will come from donations?
100%. We are neither United Way, nor state, nor federal.
Then for all practical purposes, you would be treated as a public benefit corporation.
But all my, all practical purposes, but then all
your
my members.
Your members, therefore, would not have the rights of members in a mutual benefit nonprofit.
But my, all of the MS people that we provide certain support and services, by my existing bylaws and by national bylaws, are considered members and have voting rights.
Well, your bylaws are perfectly competent to go beyond the statute and confer those voting rights. But in terms of the statutory support, the person could claim if you wanted to change your bylaws, they would not have voting rights. You would not be legally required that they have voting rights, but you would grant them. That's absolutely your prerogative to do.
So I am a public?
You would be considered, for the statute, you would be considered a public benefit nonprofit. And just to be very clear, so that the people who then were members would have the rights that the statute confers upon members of public benefit nonprofits, which are much, many fewer statutory rights. And one of them was very important object of discussion here today, and that's just right to know the identity of other members if they were interested.
But then, no, again, see, by our bylaws, by our mission statement, and by our charter, we cannot give you the names and addresses of those members.
But it's been a tremendously valuable experience. I mean, that reason for holding public testimony hearings like this is to find out this precise type of problem and information.
And then we'll go back, Ski, and...
Yeah, because you can't. I mean, I can't tell members of the Board of Trustees unless they can establish a right to know. Because confidentiality, ADA, all well and good. There are a lot of people who are still fired for having MS because it's an open-ended insurance problem for a lot of people. And so we protect them very, very well. We don't tell insurance companies if we can get out of it. I was having problems trying to identify what it was about the MDR. Qualifications of Board of Trustees is a problem.
What section do you
think? I'm on page, I'm on section 1021, 145.
145?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Leave that for you.
Bylaws, number of directors, and other content.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't address qualifications, nor do we address retirement and replacement. We have a, what our bylaws do address is a most ideal situation where we would be turning over membership in the Board of Trustees. A third of the membership would be turning over every 2 years.
Well, you don't have to do this.
It's
not
mandatory.
All it says is that if you want to, you can put in bylaws for the qualification of your trustees.
Okay.
But you don't have to.
I'm not an attorney. I only have business law.
No. Yeah. But I mean, I apologize, but I mean, the intent is that if you wished to, you could put such provisions.
Right.
You could put a provision in that only a person who had MS could be on the Board of Directors.
Right.
But, and if you were to do so, that's where you'd have to put it, is what the statute says. But you are under no obligation to establish any qualifications.
Okay. Section 1, it's not a requirement, so I do not have to go back. I would have to go back to National and request a change in bylaws.
So you won't have to do it. You don't have to now.
Now, I approach most of this as a, you know, a reasonable and prudent business person who is a custodian of donations.
That's great.
So, that's the way I'm reading this, not as an attorney. Although I have a couple of attorneys, I think I need a few more on the board. All right, section 10.21.175, restriction on accumulation of surplus current assets. Everyone else has spoken to that. What is reasonable reserve, and who's going to define it better than the Board of Trustees?
Boy, they clearly have the first crack at it.
And as long as it's part of my stated long-range plan, the state...
You have no problem whatsoever.
State.
The only thing this would do, therefore, I think you'd agree, is useful as it would go to bringing it to the attention of your Board of Trustees.
The Board of Trustees votes to put it in. We set up and down it.
But, I mean, if you had assets, all we're worried about is assets for which the trustees have indicated no purpose.
Is there any nonprofit in the state that rich?
Well, there may not be now. But there shouldn't really ever be money sitting around that would be that vulnerable.
With all due credit, sir, I've never served on a board, and I have been on 34 boards in Anchorage that has had that kind of money.
Yeah,
we've never had that kind of money problem. It's always the other direction.
See, what you're familiar with is what I'll call a traditional board that has the usual problems of nonprofits in this state. What I'm concerned about, and what this code tries to address, is the myriad of one-person nonprofit corporations out there that, where they don't have anybody else on the board, nobody knows what they're doing, they're seeking protection under the Internal Revenue Code as a nonprofit, and we don't know what they're doing with the money. There's no accountability, there's no membership, there's no dissent.
Mr. Abbott, that's the first clear, concise reason I've heard today for having this bill. Now, I have been plagued with sound-alike nonprofits in the state of Alaska last year, as a matter of fact, in the National Association of Multiple Sclerosis.
Right.
And I was writing PSAs like that, saying they're not part of ours, and I don't know anybody in Alaska that they provide service to. But I cannot say that they don't, because they have only the Attorney General to say that. But that's the first time somebody's given me a justifiable reason for 182 pages. All my nights and Saturdays. Okay, so that reasonable reserve is left up to the discretion of the Board of Trustees without. In the case, still on 10.21.175, in the case of a public benefit corporation, those recurrent and anticipated in furtherance purposes stated in the corporate article. That's the one place where you could have been a little more explicit. I thought you were agreeing.
Yes, this is the place we're going to go back.
Yeah.
And
it's a really
with respect to, yes, 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 yes.
Okay, my big is 10.21.185, donated assets held in charitable trust. Now that one is a... That's kind of a nightmare for in clear English. What are you trying to do? We try very hard to get trusts set up, with people who have particular people who or family members who have MS, that they set up a charitable trust. And because of, now this, I don't know here what you're really addressing for this part. What is a charitable trust for purposes of this legislation? Is it the form that most nonprofits are using, which is a general generic? I use the one Sister Providence used. Just paint out their name and put in MS. What defines a charitable trust?
Well,
one written by an attorney or...
No. Could we walk through it?
That's why I'm bringing this
okay.
in. I don't know what you're talking about.
What is triggered is that you have received a donation.
Right.
Okay. Now, if there is no written agreement between the donor and the public benefit corporation, and we've indicated that you would be treated as a public benefit corporation,
mm-hmm.
So the first practice haven't. Right? Now, if you did not solicit the donation, then the implied terms of the charitable trust is that you will use those assets for the public or charitable purposes stated in your articles at the time the donation was made. Right? And that you won't use it for any other purpose. So that you would expend the money
taking care of MS.
That's right. But you would not use it for other purposes. You wouldn't contribute it to some other worthy goal, such as caring for people who had mental illness.
No. I was really concerned about the debt. To me, there was a failure of defining what it was, the charitable trust, and what constitutes a written agreement. If they leave me their ivory collection in their will to be used for the welfare of MS clientele, that is intent.
Sure.
As long as I dedicate that money
for the purpose
client
of
services,
MS, and that's what. But you couldn't use it for anything else, and you couldn't use it for anything outside the purposes that the donor said. You knew it at the time. So you read my will and it says you can use it for only certain of the aspects of your organization, but not others. And you then accept the money, then you accept it with that restriction. If I don't have any restriction in my will, but I leave it to your organization, then you use it for the purposes that are stated in your articles and none other.
In our mission statement.
In your mission statement. Now, please notice though that B2 is there. If you go out and you solicit money,
yes,
because you want to build a certain facility, you come to me and say, Fessler, would you donate $2,000 because we have the following program? We have many other programs. Then this says that in the absence of some other evidence of understanding between us, then you must use my $2,000 for the purpose you solicited it for. Let's go back to the Sisters of Charity.
Right.
Suppose the Sisters of Charity come to me and say, we wish to build a nuclear medicine wing on our hospital. And would you give us $5,000 for that purpose? And I give the Sisters of Charity, Leavenworth, Kansas, here, a check for $5,000. They cannot put that into the general operating fund of the hospital, but they must expend it for the purpose that they specifically solicited, and that is the construction of a nuclear medicine facility. That's what the statute is attempting to say. Now, if it's inartful in saying it, that's all. It's trying to protect the expectation of the person who parted with the money, either in her will or if she just voluntarily comes and gives it to you and makes no restriction, you may use it for any purpose that the organization is set up to accomplish. But if you ask her and you give a specific reason for your raising the money, then you're supposed to devote that money to that purpose.
Okay, well, can let's stay on the subject and go into 190 then, because I was a little concerned there also.
Okay, but I mean,
a breach of a charitable trust. Then this whole issue of charitable trust, because we do seek donations, we receive donations, receive donations which stipulate research only. That must go out of state. There's no research done on MS in Alaska. We solicit donations for research. That has to go out of the state of Alaska.
And that's not a problem.
Doing exactly what the statute is telling you you have to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in perfect conformity.
Thank God.
Why am I not surprised? I mean, you devoted your whole life to it. I mean, one of the things you said, are we being accused of doing something bad? I've worked with these people and their predecessors now for a number of years, and I will tell you that it is not my perception. My perception is that what was being attempted was to protect the assumption that the vast majority, maybe all, of the nonprofit entities in the state of Alaska are doing business in a laudable and on the up and up way, and to keep public confidence that that is so, and to allow managements of various nonprofits. Earlier on, someone wondered, why was there this concern about stating in your biannual report information that was not only in dollar figures but also in percentages? The theory.
But if I may address this specifically to you, the National Institute of Charities, or National Charities Institute, does rank on administration. It ranks us on there are 6 points that you're ranked on.
And that's because you are a relatively large, exceedingly respected, and very well known. Would it not be useful for other charities to have the benefit of seeing that information?
But
they're not as big as might be ranked, such as you are.
But there are peaks and valleys in everything.
Oh, yes.
You know, there are going to be times when we make mistakes and we try fundraisers that flop and they get run at a loss.
But wouldn't it be good for your directors then to be able to say to the people who have the idea of that particular fundraiser, selling cookies from one of my family recipes and everyone got sick, that maybe you shouldn't do this again?
Yes, but it's also very difficult to explain why all of a sudden your cost-benefit ratio went from 20, which is 25, 26 to 29 is an acceptable ratio, to a 41 ratio. I mean, I wouldn't like to necessarily go out and talk to donors and tell them I need that ratio. It's a momentary aberration. It won't be repeated, hopefully. Next on my list of things, on the issue of, again, in public benefit corporation, membership list is inspection rights. You come back to my privacy.
And that is also a matter of great concern to you, given,
yes,
as you've explained, the status of your
mm-hmm.
patients, actually. You
know. No, we call them clients.
Clients, okay.
Thank you.
And we're going to be addressing.
You're going to address this.
Yeah, we're going to address
it. I detect unanimous sympathy among the
yes,
people.
Yes, we understand this.
1021-300, inspection of books, records, and minutes of proceedings. Minutes of proceedings of the members and the boards and the committees shall be open to inspection. I take exception to that, Mary. In service committee and in finance, we talk about patient names and needs.
Confidentiality.
Confidentiality.
So again, there have to be a
okay, we'll put it in there.
Limitation.
Yeah. Okay. The annual report requirements to members, 10-3-10, you address it again there, privacy?
Yes.
Okay. The financial report, I have the same. I'm now I'm talking about making the financial report.
What page was that?
That's your reporting requirements.
It's done. It's out of the 8th.
Is that at the biennial?
Yes.
No, this is on the new reporting requirements. Let's see. Page 43.
This is the annual report?
This is the annual report numbers now.
300. Okay.
310? Annual report.
43. I have the strange version.
Okay, that's still the annual
the
report.
Yeah.
What's the section number?
310.
310, 300, 303. Right?
303. Okay.
Liability for denial of access,
yeah,
to books and records.
Mm-hmm. I can address the issue of privacy again in there.
Whatever we
do. It'll make sense because it'll refer back.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, as a public benefit.
Whatever we would do that has to do with inspection rights and confidentiality,
okay,
requirements would run throughout the entire code.
Yeah.
It would apply to all sections where that came up. So you don't need to worry about just doing it in one place. It can be done throughout
all the
bill.
All right. On the reporting requirements, asking for a special report. Again, why can't you use our 990? I'm going to ask the question. Why can't you?
We'll ask that question ourselves.
Yeah.
All right.
It seems a reasonable question to ask.
And the annual statement to the members of insider transactions. Now, I know that that's supposed to include NASDAQ, but most of you know that the reason we have people on your board is that they will give you an insider transaction. I mean, the reason you have attorneys is so you get free legal advice.
Well, but these
that's
things,
the
other
way.
That's
the
other way.
That's not what we're worried about.
Going the other
no.
way. It's from your endowment. Me.
Well, yeah, but if I have you on my board because I know you're going to get me a good deal on travel, and my annual travel bill is $15,000 or $16,000 a year.
This doesn't prohibit that, ma'am. What this says is that you have to make, you have to let people know about it.
Because that's why I have them.
Yeah, if I've got a travel agency and you get me on your board because you want discount travel and you want to give me all the board's business or all the agency's business, you're free to do that. You just have to tell people about it.
We have a procurement requirement which says that in excess of $500, I'm going to have three bids, but my also my...
The only point I'm trying to make is that this doesn't prohibit an activity necessarily. It just says you have to tell people about the activity. So that if somebody wants to complain, they know about the transaction.
And by and large, I think that what it's aimed at is sort of the opposite of what you've described. It isn't that you are receiving free services from individuals because they become board members or discounted services from individuals. It would be that you would be having transactions in which you were transferring assets of the charity to such an individual. That's
in a sense, I am, because I am paying them for service. If it's a travel agency, and that I do have an annual travel bill, because I have... We serve the state of Alaska, and all a client has to do is say they don't have funds to come in for medical treatment.
I see what you're saying, Ski, is that you might go to a board member who's a travel agent rather than to someone else, but then on the other hand, I assume... double check those rates anyway.
I must do it, but then I go with the lowest bid, and then my travel agent comes in lower than the lowest bid.
Right.
Because she's a board member.
Right. So it's a situation in which you just have to note it, I guess, under the statute. I mean, it's not
maybe circumstances.
It's not prohibited. I mean, it's not prohibited.
That's the point I was trying to make. It's not necessarily prohibited. It just says you have to tell people about it.
Yeah. That's right.
And would the amount of commissions to that person exceed $15,000 a year?
Commissions, no, but the amount of services.
No, what we're talking about here is...
Compensation.
Compensation, so it would be the commission.
Well, compensation, now, I also have medical supply people on the Board of Trustees because that means I get the wheelchairs and beds and things cheaper than I would get at the
Right.
Company.
Right. But again, all we're worried about is compensation. You're paying to those people.
So they would have to fee in excess of $15,000.
That's why they have to be.
Well, because they normally write out their fees.
Yeah. That would be our expectation.
See, and lawyers, they would write off, you wouldn't have any fees.
Well, we do give you an in-kind contribution for it. I think about that.
You give us a bed.
If you get MS, yes.
Please.
I'll even work out something with an electric bed.
Well, Ski, I think from my perspective, I would think yours is one of those organizations, because you are part of a national group, that I bet everything you do now will comply to the new law. I mean, there's not going to be any surprises. You guys are, because you are regulated in essence in so many states and even internationally, you're not going to have any surprises. And what I would just caution you is not to let the depth and page numbers of the bill scare you, because I don't think you're going to have, I bet you don't change anything you do. I mean, I think everything's going to remain the same, and I think that's going to be...
Well, that's what Mary, thank you, because I did ask that question. For that purpose, is that I am a reasonable and prudent custodian of donations.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel.
And I expect that's...
What the statute is trying to do is to protect those people and their integrity.
Yeah.
And to show everybody else how to be that person.
Yeah.
But you will address the issue of the reporting requirements then?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And you'll address the issue of privacy of a membership?
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I might even take you to lunch.
Not using agency funds.
Oh, absolutely.
No, we'll have to pay.
Is there anybody else that wishes to offer testimony at this time? Public hearing is closed. We'll take a brief 5-minute recess, and we'll come back and take care of commission business. And we thank you for being here today.
Yes. This was real, real good.
Yes.
I'm really glad people turned out. When you compare previous times, we.
Back on the record, this is the continuation of the June 27, 1992 meeting of the Code Revision Commission. For those of you out in the audience, you are more than welcome to stay. We are not going to be taking action on the bill that was the subject of this morning's testimony at this time. That'll be done in subsequent meetings by the commission. So we will not even be talking about the nonprofit code other than in the context of when we will take it up again at a regular scheduled meeting. But again, you're welcome to stay. We're going to talk about commission general business matters like our budget for next year and what we do with funds this year. Okay, we have covered 1 and 2 and 5. Number 6, consideration of draft bills. I don't know that we necessarily have to take anything up or do take any action at this point in time with respect to those, other than to keep in mind at some point in time we'll want to prioritize our activities in front of the legislature next year given our limited funds. So you might be thinking about what we want to do. Just by way of brief overview, we haven't done anything on the Administrative Procedure Act, so we've got to discuss whether or not we want to continue that. Landlord-Tenant Act, we volunteered to do some work for the legislature. Senator Perot was not happy with the speed at which we got around to doing something with it, and we tried to explain to him what our budget limitations were, not having regular staff. So, at any rate, he was going to do something with that himself with his own bill. The last bill that I saw was a very much cut down version of what we would have considered. So,
but and he's
well, I don't even know if it got through, Mary.
Oh, okay, yeah, but but if it didn't get through, then he's out. He's gone anyway. He's gone.
But we may still want to do something with the Landlord-Tenant Act. I mean, it's still a problem. I mean, it's an area where there's a lot of difficulties in jurisdiction between superior and district court and so on and so forth. So, Title II revision, I did talk to... I'm sorry.
What senator did you say?
Pardon?
Porcio.
Perot.
I'm sorry, yeah, Porcio.
You did say Perot.
Porcio, yeah.
Speaking of the next president...
You couldn't find Perot on there?
No, he wrote. He's right next to Pat Brody there. Yes.
So, at any rate, the Title II revision, I did speak with Senator Alford, told him that we needed some direction from the legislature. We've gotten none, so, or at least as far as I'm concerned, we've done our duty, and unless we hear something different from the legislature or from him, we should not contemplate any further action on Title II. Uniform Limited Partnership Act, I don't know if that got through the legislature or not.
Yes, so. It did.
Yeah, it did. It did?
Yes.
Okay. So, that we don't need to worry about.
What happened?
Do we need to be fearful?
Quiver.
Did the Art Peterson
version... They adopted the, if I'm correct, as far as I remember, they adopted the 1988 version. Or the very latest version, which I think is 88 or 86, except that they didn't adopt the the reduced requirements for the certificate of partnership.
Good.
That was the thing you objected to, wasn't it? So the Peterson version then was not adopted.
Half of the Peterson version.
Okay,
was.
Half. Okay. 1992 fiscal year budget, collapsing funds. Terry and I have done a rough calculation on what we have left, and it's someplace between $10,000 and $12,000. We have a contract with you for this particular session, Daniel, for up to $5,000. Is that going to cover your services?
Well, now let's talk about that. I'm sorry, I haven't billed for any services.
Our expectation is that you will bill for your services for attending today.
Well, but that's...
The reason there's no formal contract is because...
Well, what I'm trying to say to you is that, I haven't had a chance to to everybody, but I mean, my situation right now is that I was always a school teacher. I still am on the faculty of the University of California, but now my basic position is that I find myself as the president of this damn commission, and my time is not my own. And until that happened in February of 1991, I mean, working with this body has been one of the most exceptional experiences I had, but I don't see how I could enter into any contracts with the state of Alaska that wouldn't be subject you have to make time available. I don't know that I can in good faith tell you that I've got time available. And so I think that it's better not to be spending any money on me. I mean, I just...
Well, but Dan, I mean, we can pay you for your time and your travel expenses for doing this meeting. I mean,
yeah,
you're not prohibited from...
No, but what I'm saying is, as far as...
Like future.
My interest in working with you is arrested by the job I'm now in.
Right.
Not by anything else. I mean, this is one of the things that I was aware I was going to probably have to be forced to give up, and it was going to be one of the more difficult things for me to give up. And on an uncompensated basis, I would be perfectly willing to, you know, chat about matters as I'm able, but I'm really sort of off your radar screen in the future.
Were you appointed for what, 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years.
God, a death sentence.
Well, as Leslie says, it is 4 years, 5 months, and 18 days.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, but the commission, we should consider, I mean, let's say if 5,000 is acceptable vis-a-vis what you've done for us today and your travel and that sort of thing.
Well, it's grossly excessive.
Well, put it this way, Danny. We allocated up to $5,000.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay.
Of our budget, which does not include the $10,000 to $12,000 that I made reference to earlier.
I understand.
That's
okay.
After subtracting.
I'm just telling you, you didn't spend it.
Okay, good.
All right.
No. But let's, because I do have to get out of here. So let's figure out, are we going to encumber then some of this other stuff, or can we?
Well, Terry's going to tell us if we can encumber it.
Basically, I just want to assume from your conversation that you have approved the expenditure for Professor Fessler.
I will do that formally. So
yeah, but I just assume that the commission
yes,
has approved
yes.
that.
Yes.
Okay, then you can contract, it would have to go through, actually Legislative Affairs Agency has to do the contract, but up to $5,000 for each contract without having the commission, Legislative Council approve it. So whatever you can do, and the best approach at this time, because July for to encumber the money that is this fiscal year's money, is to have the commission approve the contract at this meeting or before July 1st, and to have the contract actually start before July 1st. And then in those cases, the people in our admin will be able to encumber the money. And then we'll drop the contract next week. But we'd have to have those two things. Those would be great.
That's great. So then the question is, how much money we have and who are we? Or do we have anyone to contract with, right?
Who can start work by Tuesday.
Yeah. So how much money do we have?
We have $10,000 to $12,000. Plus whatever portion of the $5,000 that I made earlier reference to,
which is our good Professor
Fields, is grossly overcompensated.
Well, no, my...
$3,000.
In the past, when I worked for you, you paid me $160 an hour. I figure with the time I have here and the time I had looking over this stuff beforehand, you owe me for 8 hours. So, you'll make $1,200.
But you came up here, too.
Well,
plus,
we're going to pay for your travel too.
Well, but you sent me a TR. I got a coach.
Yeah, but
time. But that didn't pay you for your hours spent. That paid you for your transportation. That is it's customary to pay a professional
okay.
for the time spent in traveling.
We're going to let the chairman and you work this out,
okay.
but you get our drift.
Yes.
Certainly. Okay, so we have like 15 to 18,000.
Well,
no.
How much? No, well, how much? He's going to have transportation.
Say 3,000.
Transportation costs. Okay.
After Dan has been paid for this
right.
meeting. We will have someplace between $10,000 and $14,000.
Okay. So then do we have someplace to spend it?
But that's what we're trying to come up with. And I would propose, if we could do this, Terry, that we enter into a contract with you, which starts immediately, which provides for you to take into consideration what we dealt with today at this meeting, but which doesn't have to be completed until sometime, and then say in the next 6 months, or sometime before we need to have a bill.
I really appreciate it.
And if you don't want to do that,
I would love to, but my difficulty is that I don't know where I'm going to be in terms of when you need me in the next 6 months. It was real fortuitous that I was able to get up here for this meeting, but I'd love it, but I can't.
Okay, so then, John, the question is, do we want... let me ask you this. Is it permissible for us to... I have two questions. Is it permissible for us to spend money out of category?
Yes.
Okay. So then, can we do this without kind of insider stuff? Can we say then that, say, for instance, the chairman, we would like to have the chairman facilitate what we've heard here today and make a report and do that on a contract? Can we do that? Can we have a contract with one of our members?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
We can't do that.
Well, maybe
technically, but not advisable. Okay, so we don't have anybody to contract with.
Well, you know, we can. That's we have a few days left to come up with somebody to contract with. It would be nice to for somebody to, at a minimum, transcribe these proceedings for us, so that we have a written record of what comments came in, and two, put them in some sort of organized form so that we could relate them to specific statutory sections. And then maybe number three, if we can get an attorney to do it, have some language alternatives provided to us. But it doesn't sound like anything that came up at the meeting today is, from a legal drafting perspective, going to cause serious problems. The policy questions are serious. It may cause us heartburn, but as far as the drafting is concerned, I think it's going to be fairly straightforward. So then the question would be, can we find somebody else that does corporate law work that we can contract with?
And what are our requirements with respect to, you know, solicitation? I mean, in other times when we have had other lawyers work for us, we've solicited...
If it's under $5,000, I don't think we have to do that. And it's a fair... We don't even have to get approval from legislative council. The difficulty is splitting the projects up so that we could get two $5,000 contracts with a stated purpose sufficiently distinguishable so that we could say they were two separate contracts.
Well, one of them is transcription,
right.
And the other one... is legal.
Legal drafting.
And frankly, I'd like to have somebody pay a little attention to right to privacy and freedom of association. I mean, we all know a little bit about it, but someone needs to really focus on it.
Can we split it up that way and still pass muster?
Well, it seems logical to me that if you can, that the transcription and that type of related activity would be a separate contract for legal research done.
Yes.
And if you had different people specializing in different areas of the research, you could split that too. It would seem logical if you have different parties. But I don't know if you were talking about that, but you could definitely split up the transcription from the legal services.
Okay. With the understanding that we could split it up in those two areas, the second question is, do I have the authority as the chairman, with the approval of the whole commission, to go ahead and enter into a verbal contract with somebody the same as I did with Professor Fessler for this meeting?
This commission can approve right now whatever contracts. They can give you whatever
powers.
Yeah,
we don't know who we're going to be.
I know, but
they
can give you the powers. They can say,
oh, okay.
We want a transcription
contract,
you do it. Okay. We want as many terms as you can down, fine, but...
Requires a motion, Mr. Chairman. I would move that the chairman be authorized to enter into a two contracts, one for transcription of the record, preparation of the record of this meeting, one for doing legal services to accomplish the any changes that the commission determines need to be done.
And as I understand it, the legal services contract, if we don't split it out between some research on right to privacy and something, it has to be under $5,000.
Yes.
All our contracts have to be under
$5,000.
That's all we have.
So transcription isn't going to cost, I mean, if transcription costs, you know, $1,000, I'd be shocked. So we have a $1,000 transcription cost and then a $5,000 legal contract.
You're suggesting that maybe the motion should be amended to have two legal service contracts.
That's what I'm suggesting, if that's what the commission wants.
Well, the transcription could include specific reference to section numbers and everything, so it's more than just transcribing.
True.
It's putting it into a framework that's easy for us to work with it.
Right.
So that we can say, okay, here's all the comments that came in on section so-and-so, here's the ones that came in on section so-and-so, here's the general comments. So it may be that we can spend more than just the transcription cost on that function.
But in addition to that, whatever that cost is, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, then if we want to be able to encumber our funds, we really need to have perhaps two separate legal contracts, if not more than $5,000.
Can we do that, Terry?
Well, I think the idea is not to arbitrarily split them to avoid the procurement procedures. So if you have two distinguishable areas, and it would be a good idea if you had experts in each area.
That would seem to be
a logical breakdown, split of the contract.
The person that would be an expert in right to privacy law would not necessarily be somebody
true.
That would had expertise in the area of corporation law.
Which would seem very logical.
Right.
Okay, so
I would send the body amend the motion to authorize if the chairman's able to develop the two.
So it would be two contracts for legal services and one for non-legal. Okay.
And would these all to start before September 1st?
I'm sorry?
Would these all start before July 1st?
Yes.
The work.
And they would. No contract would exceed $5,000.
Although it may be possible to have the contracts, actual expenses not be included in that $5,000.
Actually what?
It's possible not to have the actual expenses, let's say, of the attorney doing that, not to be included in the $5,000. In other words, the reimbursables.
Right.
That can be above. We've interpreted it that way.
Okay. So. Any discussion on the motion?
Yeah. I have a little bit of concern because I'm not indisposed to allowing the chairman to select the people and so forth, and because I think John's in the best position to do that, but a lot of times the commission has discussed who we might have and then have gotten input. Remember, there's been a couple of times that we've formed a subcommittee, and I realize times are tight and so forth.
I would be delighted to delegate this.
I don't want any delegation. But what I am concerned about is if you had anybody in mind that we might know who the people are.
I have nobody in mind because this is the first that's come up. If you want to talk on Monday, I'd be delighted to do that with you.
I can't talk.
But see, that's it. We've got Monday's the 29th.
I know. It's too tight. So I'm going to because you're the best, absolutely the best person to do this. So, and I think we should have something like this done. And I think that way we best utilize the hearing we had, because I was very impressed with the fact that people came out and made themselves available to the commission. And I think we need to use that information to further develop this. And I mean, I was also very, very impressed by the fact that none of the religious groups that came out before are here. And I'm glad I talked to the bishop, and I'm glad I did certain things. But you know, it was good. I mean, that was nice for me to see that. Well, the Catholic Church doesn't have any problem.
Well, that was not by accident. I mean, you were involved in this behind the scenes, and several other people.
I think that's good. So that means that the bill has a very good chance of getting through. So I'm going to just go ahead and I don't have any problem with that at all.
Just so you understand, I'm more than delighted to delegate this to anybody else that wants to do it. And I welcome any input from anybody, so long as I get it by Monday. Any further discussion?
Well,
Any objection to the motion? The motion carries. Okay. I would like to make a motion that we get some new letterhead stationery that accurately reflects the present membership. The present stationery that we have, I think, is identifies correctly about half of the members.
Oh, and everybody changes anyway.
Probably not. But.
Well, except, John, Robin Taylor, we're going to have to wait for a new appointment, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that may not occur until a year from now. Or 2 years from now.
But I mean, I don't want to kick Mr. Taylor off on my own, but he held the position by reason of his being in the House. And he's not in the House anymore.
Well, but if you read the statute, Title 24, it says that a person serves until somebody else is appointed. That's certainly true of public members. I can't remember if that's true of the other ones, too.
Except that it's an ex officio.
They do tend to, I think, make those changes pretty quickly.
I'm sorry?
They do tend to make those types of changes pretty quickly. I can't guarantee it. You know, all it has to come is from
That's not been my experience,
speaker.
Jerry. My experience has been that those changes can take 6 months.
Between Fran and when they're in the legislature itself?
I have, for every appointment that either the House or the Senate has made, I've had to call somebody and try and speed up the process, and sometimes it's worked and sometimes it hasn't. So they won't choose somebody for the commission until the Legislative Council meets again. And Legislative Council won't consider something like this till they find out what the leadership is, because they will use the commission position as a chit. I don't know why anybody thinks it has any value as a legislative member.
But the commission doesn't appoint them.
No, I'm saying the legislature...
I mean the council does.
...holds this out
okay.
as
right.
a plum in dividing up the leadership pie, so that if there are 30 positions, the commission seat is one of those. Although, it escapes me why that's considered a plum, but it is.
Well, John, the minutes I have for the September have all of us on it. There isn't anybody on it that's not presently on the commission.
I'm sorry, what was that again?
Everybody on the minutes for September 21st are currently on the commission.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
this is up today.
Okay.
Oh.
Then we're in good shape.
We put it on our computer, I think.
That's why. I'm thinking of the stationery. This is computer generated.
Oh, okay.
I've done the same thing. I've got the commission letterhead on my own computer.
Oh, okay.
So I've been using my computer-generated letterhead for correspondence.
I knew something was wrong there.
Because Wilson Condon, I know, is still on the
station. Yeah. Oh, well, I don't have any.
As is Brian Ulmer.
No, okay. No objection.
No. Okay. Does the commission want to consider buying any equipment with any funds that are available? And I'm not suggesting this for myself, but I will point out that I have used the fax machine that the commission purchased for me to really good advantage in working with the legislature. So, I mean, it's been a real godsend for me. I'm not aware of anything else we need, but I throw it out in case any of the other commissioners feel that something else would make life easier if we had some additional equipment. Anything that any of the other commissioners want to propose for use of funds which will lapse?
Other than stipends, you mean?
I'm sorry?
Other than stipends for all our good work. You're going to get to it with our next meeting.
Yes.
I don't have any.
Okay. Anything further on fiscal year 92 budget? Fiscal year 93 budget, just to let you know what we've got. I assume here, Terry, and I've been telling people that the 14.7 is the money available to the commission, which is presently unencumbered and does not include services of legislative affairs persons such as yourself.
This is the 14,700 is the total budget for the commission for 93.
Including your...
There are no staff position money.
Okay, but in the past, we've gotten a budget of X number of dollars, a portion of which has gone to pay for your services and Lynn Barnes' services, and the balance for other things.
And there's no more. No, they don't do that. They didn't do that in this bill.
Okay.
Now, this also, let me tell you, this is subject to the governor's veto, whatever he
does.
Does that mean we don't have staff, Terry?
You don't have, I mean, we're always there as staff, but you don't have what you had before, which was a third position, attorney position, and a third support position.
Up until about 4 years ago, when Senator Sturgiolowski wanted to change it, that's the way we operated. Legislative affairs staff was never paid out of commission budget. So that just constitutes a reversion to the way we used to do business. Any questions or comment on fiscal year 93 budget?
Well, are those figures for travel, for example, constrictive, or we're going to be limited what we can do? We have to, at some point, talk about the limited travel money to accomplish meeting purposes.
Well, if we've got 14.7 to spend, assuming there's no gubernatorial veto or no reduction in that, that will pay for probably six meetings, travel, per diem, so on and so forth. It will not cover contractual services. And, of course, we're free to make disbursements regardless of the categories, the budget categories, in which this is characterized for the time. So that probably will be enough for us to conduct our meetings. We're not going to have any money left over to go out and hire consultants.
Can you use any unencumbered money that we don't spend to buy plane tickets for next session?
You can, if you spend it,
in other words, could we hold our next
I point? Think you probably could purchase, if you purchase things now, you've got it.
Purchase Alaska Airline tickets, Anchorage to Juneau.
I can double check Monday if you want to.
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea.
So if you want to authorize it subject to my just checking into it Monday, I think it's probably okay, but I just have to double check.
Great idea.
Well, it doesn't work. We're no worse off than we are now. Yeah, that's a great idea. Do we have a motion?
Second.
I move.
The motion, as I understand it, is to encumber these funds by the purchase of round-trip tickets, coach class, between Anchorage and Juneau for purposes of meetings that will be held in Juneau. And we need a dollar amount, up to $3,000.
But you might want to leave it up to the chair's discretion.
Yeah, I would think that up to an amount that the chairman determined is available.
Okay.
Now, what I was saying is that this is, it's probably fine, but I have to check and see if you can do it. You can't, if you spend it now, you couldn't just say, well, it was coming out of fiscal year 93 funds. So it's just subject to it being okay.
Understand.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And since Delta's no longer flying from Fairbanks to Juneau, Dick would have to come through Anchorage anyway. So Anchorage tickets would for like our January, February meeting?
Well, Dick has expressed to me in the strongest possible terms, short of profanity and defamation, that he wants to get off the commission.
Oh.
So that
wants to get off?
Off, yes. So that's something.
But we still would have a Fairbanks person.
Presumably, if we
at
find
some.
Yeah. I have talked to one person in Fairbanks that has expressed an interest in being on the commission. That's Dave Call.
Well, that'd be great.
So.
Who is that?
David Call.
David Call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be great.
So.
Okay.
That was something I wanted to bring up under new business in the commission to see if that was, if I should just go ahead. Normally, what we've done in the past is to submit two names to legislative council. At least two names, and then prioritize them in terms of the choices of the commissioners have. So, why don't we have a committee work on that and come up with, say, two or three names to submit to legislative council for appointment of a public member? Who would like to serve on that committee?
I will.
Okay. Judge?
I'm so far away from the name, I don't think I'd be able to do it.
Eric?
All of us do it.
Okay. I will appoint then as a committee of two, Carolyn Jones and Eric Leroy, to come up with the names of, say, three individuals from the Fairbanks area that would be willing to serve on the commission, and then we'll just submit a recommendation and a request to legislative council if they make an appointment to fill Dick Madsen's unexpired term. Okay. Getting back to the tickets, I take it we have a motion that would authorize me to expand or encumber what funds were available for the purchase of tickets, airline tickets between Anchorage and Juneau for commission members. Is there any objection to that motion? Motion carries. Anything further on 1993 fiscal year budget? Any other old business? Any new business other than what's been talked about? I would recommend that in terms of our next meeting, we hold it either in Anchorage or Juneau sometime in September. And that we plan to teleconference that and give the nonprofit corporation people, secular and religious, an opportunity to testify by teleconference or in person.
Seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that Anchorage is a better size. Unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, I'll be gone from approximately the 9th of September until the 23rd of October.
I'll be gone the first week of September.
How about October?
I should be here in October.
I'll be gone all of October.
Quorum.
Last part of August?
I'm leaving the last part of August.
I'm available up until the 9th of September.
Who can't make it the first week in September?
Well, when is, if you that, the 9th of September is a Wednesday, Labor Day is on a Monday. Is that what you're talking about the first week?
Yes, sometime in that.
Well, the judge wouldn't be available after the 9th.
Not on the 9th either. Reservations to leave on the 9th. Is it, is that date, that early date desirable for about the last week of October?
Eric's going to be gone the entire month of October.
I'll be back first week of November.
First week of November would be good as far as
I'm sorry.
That would be good, the first week of November.
First week of November.
There
is a pressing reason why it should have to be quicker.
No.
I think what our discussion was, when the gentleman or was it the lady asked about what we might act, it's realistic to suppose we're not going to get passage in this next session.
Right.
And so if we aren't really that pressed for time, the sooner the better. But by the time we get the transcription, which will be necessary for lawyers to work on what's proposed. I think we're looking at November anyhow.
Okay. November 2 is a Monday, and November 6th is a Friday. What's the pleasure of that?
Later in the week,
November
6th. 6th, that'll be a Friday?
Yep.
Got suitable to everybody?
So far.
Okay, next meeting then will be November 6th. Friday in Anchorage, and we'll have on the agenda the secular and religious nonprofit codes.
For public hearing.
For public hearing and for teleconference.
Okay. And the appropriate, what is it, hearing impaired assistance, oops, junk, whatever it is.
I had no idea they had that. I've been coming down here for years, and I would have used that if I'd known they had it. I was amazed.
They have it.
It's just that I didn't make arrangements in advance because I didn't know anybody would request it, and I can't get in touch with any staff people today. Anything further to come before the commission at this time?
Want this back, or we take this?
Take that with you if you want. Hearing nothing, we stand adjourned until November 6th at 9 a.m.
Thanks.